Now, God wants that truth to be absolutely clear to every single human being, whether it's 4,000 years ago or today, a scientist or a young child. Every human being is held accountable for knowing, not wishing, believing, hoping, wondering, knowing that God exists. And because God has made it so obvious by observing what he's made, we are accountable for obeying that God. And yet every human being from Adam and Eve to the smallest child who will be in this auditorium, deep down knows that they haven't. They know God is just and holy and can't not punish sin, or he wouldn't be holy, and that they don't deserve to spend eternity with him. So creation and the knowledge of it and the implications of it is what leads directly to the gospel message of what God has done for us. And that's going to be a big part of the wrap-up message. Now, this is a very clear statement. At the beginning, and Jesus said, have you not read, at the beginning of creation, this is Jesus speaking, I made male and female human beings. Not after billions of years. At the beginning of creation. It couldn't mean anything else. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And yet we are living in a culture where intelligent, smart, articulate, sincere, friendly, brilliant teachers and scientists and professors in the museum and internet people in the facial park system, everything around us is totally denying that that is true. That's the world we're up against, and that's how the children who are going to be here all this week are being trained. And we have a few hours to try to set it all straight. And please be in prayer as we do that. And Friday, please come. Every lecture I'm going to give, every talk, either to the children or others, is going to be different. And we're going to have a recap of the kind of things that they are going to have learned all week. And you're going to get a taste of it today. Now, God created science. Not just the world, but the command to understand what he did. See, the very first command to the very first people who ever stepped foot on this planet, one day here on earth there were no people, the very next day there's two fully grown, fully functional, incredibly intelligent human beings. That's what God has told us as fact and reality. And he said to them to be fruitful and multiply and have dominion over everything that moveth upon the earth. Now, what is that? What is that word? Well, if you go back in these ancient languages, you've got to see how else they're used and what the implications are. And the word dominion carries with it the idea of studying, understanding, and controlling creation. If you got to study it to see what it is. You got to understand it. And we have been given the privilege of having control over creation. That is science. God's very first command to human beings was to do science. So this is not something we're going to do and come to the conclusion God doesn't even exist. And you don't if you actually look at what we learned. And lastly, kind of my key verse is that verse out of Romans that says, what may be known about God? Who wouldn't want to know about God? Is manifest or obvious to all human beings because God has shown it. How? From the creation of the world. From the creation of the world, everything's been clearly seen by what has been made. So every human being is without excuse for belief in God. Now, therefore, evolution can't be true. Evolution's the idea, cosmic evolution, everything made itself. Time, matter, space, energy. We'll deal with that Monday with the kids. Biological evolution, that bacteria, life came alive from chemicals, and then bacteria turned into fish that turned into land animals that turned into monkeys that turned into people. By the way, none of these things could possibly be true. It's simply a faith that you come to the conclusion it must be true because you've left the other possibility out, that God's the one who did it. Now, some of the things we're going to show, and by the way, on Wednesday we'll deal with the idea that chemicals come alive. On Tuesday and Thursday, we're going to look at some of these phenomenal creatures that God created. And I'll show you a couple examples today. Now, the simplest cell is a bacteria. The simplest form of life that can reproduce itself and is actually alive is a bacteria. And it has thousands of parts. And these parts are more complex than any machine any human being has ever built. I mean, the cell has a waste disposal system. It has a barrier that only allows things in that are the right kind of things, oxygen and food. It has a library of information. It has road systems. It has moving mechanical machines that move stuff around. It has energy factories that create electrical and chemical energy. And all these things all have to be there working at once. And not a single chemical, a biological biochemical that actually forms the right three-dimensional structure inside of a cell, not one of them could have ever made itself. And I'll show those kids why in a little bit. But we're going to do experiments like this. Now, I have a can here I call the magic can of evolution. And I can't, like, put life in here. And life is like a really complex machine. But what I put inside is a pin, which is like a little machine with lots of parts. They're not even complex. Now, the pin has a tip, which has been designed by intelligence to have exactly the right shape to work in part of the overall functioning structure, the pin. Well, put it in the can. It has a spring, again, designed to be that shape, and a cartridge. It has a little rubber sleeve, which is stuck. Here it comes, coming off. Yeah, maybe not. Well, we're just going to leave the sleeve on. That one's stuck. Okay, it has a clip to go in your pocket. It has a button so it'll go click, click, click. A little mechanism so it pops in and out. And a tube with my stuck rubber sleeve on it. All in there. Seven parts. Now, none of those parts could make themselves. You can't fly to Mars, get out of your planet. No human being's ever been there, reach down, and it'd pull out of a piece of a pin. That means somebody was there to make that part. And we know it inherently. But evolution says chemicals just came together, maybe a spark or lightning, a little explosion like the Big Bang in some pond somewhere, and the parts came together to form the first living cell. Well, that would be like all evolution has is random energy, shaking the can. Do you think that's going to turn it back into a pin? Anybody? Well, how about if I just spin it just right or kick it just right? Is that going to turn it back into a pin? How about if I do this for, like, say, a million years? It's going to be a long sermon tonight. Now, I think you kind of get the idea, but, you know, I'm a scientist. I love experiments. Maybe I'm using the wrong kind of energy. Maybe I need a real powerful kind of energy, so I have a firecracker. Okay, so I'm going to add a whole bunch of energy all at once to my can, and we're going to see what happens. Love science. Here we go. Boom! Oh, I hate it when this happens, but there's the pin. Now, wait till the kids see it. You won't be able to hear yourself think. They'll be laughing so loud. Because even a four-year-old knows what I just did is so absurd, they'll just start laughing. Now, I just pretended that six parts, by adding random energy, could form a complex structure, a little machine that needs all the parts in the right place. And it's so absurd, you all just started laughing when I did that. You see, and I got to tell the kids, see, there's two pins in the can. The parts are still there. I deceived you when I pulled that out. It was total fantasy. Now, the idea that a million times more complex parts than any one of the parts of this pin, and 1,000 of them, every one of them is needed to be a bacteria, could all have come together, all by themselves, made themselves, and formed a working bacteria, is a trillion times more absurd. And yet we live in a world where brilliant PhD professors and biochemists and schools all over the nation, if anybody would dare doubt that that is a fact of science, they won't be allowed to teach in a university or work in any of our school systems. That's the world we live in. Absolute absurdity. Why? To leave God out, to pretend that God doesn't exist. And even Christians get pulled into this. their thinking is they become Christians, they've been trained. Evolution's a fact, evolution's a fact, evolution's a fact, millions of years, and everything will be interpreted that way. And they miss the obvious. Now, another example, I'm just gonna pick one of these really cool creatures God made, and I'm gonna talk about, actually, I'm not even gonna use this one of the kids, this is just for tonight, is the leaf hopper, okay? Now, the leaf hopper is like the Olympic gold medal winning animal, track and field animal of the insect kingdom on steroids, because nothing jumps like the leaf hopper. There's about 20,000 variations. Doesn't mean God instantly at the beginning of creation made 20,000 different leaf hoppers. He made the leaf hopper kind with all sorts of information in its DNA code so it could vary and fill all sorts of environments and niches and disguises and places. And it was all that information was there to begin with to give the variety. Now, it has hind legs like a huge catapult designed to propel it forward at incredible speeds. Matter of fact, the little baby nymph, which is about the size of a grain of sand, still has those legs. When it goes to jump, it accelerates at 400 G-forces, 400 times the acceleration of gravity, pulling something to the ground. Now, in perspective, an astronaut, when they're in training, they'll put them in a centrifuge and spin them at faster and faster and faster speeds. That's what creates acceleration in the G-force. It's like when you step on the gas pedal, you'll feel yourself being shoved back into the seat. Well, at about 10 Gs, 10 times the acceleration of gravity, we're in danger of blacking out because the oxygen's being shoved, that blood, out of our heads, and our brain might black out. And you get close to that in jet fighters and during acceleration to leave the force of gravity. So they want to make sure they can withstand it. Now, here's what 10 Gs looks like in the inside of this centrifuge. Those ladies are moving forward so fast their faces are being shoved backwards, okay? That insect takes off at 400 Gs, 40 times faster. It's like a bullet coming out of the gun. When it jumps, flings its legs forward, it disappears. It's so fast, like a bullet. Now, here's the problem. Scientists know how fast a nerve signal can go to the brain to the whatever muscle has to contract. So if my insect's walking along one day, dum 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 dum, and it says jump with its little insect brain, that signal has to go down its back, and then it splits. It has to go to the right leg and the left leg. But to move at the speed of a bullet, it's guaranteed one of those signals is going to hit the muscle sooner than the other one, and it's going to respond with only one of those legs pushing. Now, if I'm going to jump and I shove with just my right leg, am I going to go in a straight line? No, at the speed of a bullet, I'm going to go sideways. My head is going to hit the tree. My brains are going to go flying all over the forest, and I'm going to be a dead leaf hopper. I'm going to go extinct. But it doesn't. It goes in a straight line. This is a scientific mystery. How does this insect do this? Well, they started studying it. And they started looking at it with dissecting and electron microscopes. And deep down inside of the insect, this is what they found. Two perfectly formed gears inside of this insect. Now, these weren't made by a machine shop. These are made out of a perfectly designed chemical protein that lines itself up to form gears. Now, there's a gear attached to the right leg. There's a gear attached to the left leg, and if one of those legs starts to move before the other, the gears make the legs move in perfect unison. Isn't that cool? Yeah. The awesomeness of God. You understand, back there in that verse in Romans, it said we can even understand the very power and Godhead or nature of God himself by looking at creation. The genius of this. Now, can evolution explain this? Evolution, by the way, why do people believe in evolution? Because if God didn't make Adam and Eve, one day they weren't there, the next day they were. What's the only other possibility? What is the only other possibility? If God didn't do that, something that wasn't a human must have turned into a human, right? That's it. We exist. That's the only other possibility. And what turned, it must have been something that looked a little like us, an ape or a monkey. Well, what turned into the ape or monkey? Must have been a four-legged creature. What turned into the four-legged creature? Must have been some sort of a reptile creature. What turned into the reptile? Must have been some sort of amphibian. What turned into the amphibian? Must have been a fish. What turned into the bacteria? Must have been chemicals. See, as soon as you leave out what God told us, you are guaranteed to misinterpret all of biology. And by the way, on Wednesday, we're going to talk about the worldwide flood and the rock layers and the fossils and the dinosaurs. Soon as you leave out the worldwide flood, what God told us about the history of this planet, you are guaranteed to misinterpret geology and all of Earth history. It's not that you're right. It's just you have left the truth out. So here's the big question. How can people not see what is so obvious? You see, if God didn't make the leaf hopper, where did those gears come from? Well, the only other options, they must have come from something that wasn't a gear. Maybe that insect had like a little round thing attached to its legs, a little tumor, a little protein thing. Well, a mutation is nothing but a mistake in the programming code, and it always destroys information. There's no example of any mutation that has added an increasing level of information. It would be like taking that little thing and hitting it with a hammer. And hitting it again, mutation, 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 generation after generation. Well, you might start to form a little fin. Well, now you've got something inside the insect with a fin sticking out, and when the legs rotate, it's just going to grind away at the inside of the insect. Or maybe you have two fins over here, and it's just the legs get locked up, and it goes extinct. Or maybe you have two fins here and one fin there. The legs are going to lock up. Or maybe you have fins sticking straight out and other fins sticking up at an angle. The legs are going to lock up. It's going to go extinct. You'd have to have exactly the right number of fins at exactly the right angle, exactly the right length, attached inside of that insect at exactly the right spot. There'd have to be a muscle attached to all of these new fins that are perfectly designed so that it could pull the legs forward. There'd have to be a nerve attached to that muscle, sending the signal to the brain. The brain would have to know what to do with it all. Do you understand what the complexity I've just described? And if any of it's missing, random change along the way, the legs lock up, the insect dies, no more leaf hopper. God has made the truth so obvious. Nobody could not know the truth by looking at just that one little piece of that one little insect. It could never have made itself. See, the problem with evolution is it doesn't scientifically work. It's a faith. And whatever the problems are pointed out, the solution will always be we'll figure it out eventually. We're still studying it. We just don't quite know quite what the mechanism is. It's faith. It's one faith against another faith. It's not science against religion. But our faith lines up with reality. Their faith really doesn't. Second, it directly undermines what God has told us. So whenever the belief in evolution increases and accepted, the belief in God's word and the relevance of God's very existence diminishes. To the point we become a minority in a culture and persecution becomes next. How dare you teach your children something that couldn't possibly be true? People just appeared on this planet. Or whatever the Bible has to say. See, that's where we're at in our culture. Now, I want to wrap up with just one example, and I'll use others with the kids, and I'll use others on Friday night, of how and why people can be so blind. And that's the question. How can the people around us, the educators, the textbook writers, the museum people, how can they be so blind to things as obvious as I just showed you all? Because it really is obvious. It couldn't have made itself. The man who studied how the human brain operated, probably more than any other human being, especially at his time, was a man named Dr. William James. He's known as the father of human psychology. How do our minds come to a conclusion about what's true and what's false, what's right and what's wrong? And after studying people his entire life, he was the first one to teach psychology at Harvard University in the late 1800s. This was his bottom line statement. Nothing is too absurd to be believed if it's simply repeated often enough. You take any human being and you show them only one viewpoint, and you do it over and over and over and over and over and over and over. How many times have we been told things are millions and billions of years old? 10,000 times by the time we get to my age. We've heard it over and over and over. So we just accept it. See, just because we're a Christian doesn't mean everything in our brain lines up exactly with God's word. God holds us accountable for trusting him, but he doesn't mind when we try to figure out why what we've come to believe doesn't line up with what he clearly says. So here's an example. This is 60 years ago this experiment was performed, of a scientist who was trying to figure out, are our beliefs, what we believe to be true, are they hardwired into our brain, or is something as simple as why we see things the way we do totally adaptable to information that comes in? Watch this little video.
For example, if seeing were done only in the eye, everything would be upside down to us. Just as in a camera, the lens of the eye forms the image upside down. The image is then inverted by the brain so that it appears right side up. Now, what would happen if a lens system were used to form the image right side up? Well, the brain would immediately invert the image so that it would be upside down. But would this condition be permanent? To answer this question, we asked Mr. Gratz, our optical expert, to design for us a pair of inverting spectacles. While the spectacles were being constructed in our shop, we faced the problem of who was going to wear the things continuously for several weeks. You'll want to meet our unlucky winner. That's right, me. Even from the first, it was possible to walk in this topsy-turvy fashion. But it didn't take long to develop a rollicking case of seasickness. We decided that for your sake as well as ours, we'd better conduct our first test sitting down. However, just sitting down wasn't so easy. Even the simplest tasks were at first impossible. No amount of concentration or effort could overcome the compulsion to reach in the wrong direction. The inverting spectacles had to be worn every waking moment during the entire period of the experiment. Anytime the glasses were removed, the eyes were closed or fully covered. Walking to work upside down was an exhausting experience. But it provided a valuable period of relearning and reorientation. It also caused quite a stir in the neighborhood. Gradually, it became easier to get around in this upside-down world. By a slow and painful process, the image in the brain had been erected.
Now, you can't see what he's seeing. You're just seeing a film crew do this. But I've spent 3 years traveling around the United States on location at the Grand Canyon, Mount St. Helens, Mount Rushmore Science Museums. I did an 18-part curriculum, spent $10,000 on every 45-minute talk. So it's a $200,000 project. I end each of them with these kind of little videos to help us understand why the world around us is so blinded. And in the very first sequence, I show this. And they show him, with the glasses on, flying an airplane, riding a motorcycle. He can clearly now see right side up. Now, as you're looking at me, at the back of your retina, the image is upside down. Your brain takes that and flips it right side up. Now, you can't make it not do that. You can't make it yourself see it any other way. But he puts these glasses on, and day after day after day, enormous amounts of information is coming in, visual information into his brain, and his brain is saying, I know everything is right side up, but it looks upside down. Everything ought to be like, look the other way. I know it, this is 180 degrees wrong from what is reality, but the information just keeps coming in and coming in and coming in. And it wasn't like after a week he starts seeing things at 45 degrees, and in 10 days it was at 70 degrees. He wakes up one morning, takes off the mask, puts on the glasses, opens his eyes, and now everything's right side up when he's looking through those glasses. You see, when we train generation after generation after generation to totally reject what God has made absolutely crystal clear. And by the way, the things that are important, God repeats them over and over and over again. And they show up in both the Old Testament and the New Testament. And they are written in such a way that you can't possibly know what they're saying. This is the very mind of God. So there are things we aren't going to quite necessarily comprehend or understand to every possible nuance. But the things that are really important, God isn't out to hide the truth. We just choose to not believe them. And when we're trained and we have a public education system where the majority, 90% of the culture is going to go through, and it's left out, it means it either doesn't matter, God doesn't matter, or it's not existent. He doesn't even exist. And then we're surprised as our culture deteriorates. This is so important what your church is doing with this generation that's coming in here. And thank you for doing it. And there is so many places in the Bible where you get this statement. Let my word be the lamp unto my feet and the light unto my path. See, we don't even know if we're seeing things right side up because we've been trained to think in some way about some subject. And it may be totally wrong. And God has given us his word to teach us about economics, about government, about morality, about salvation, about science, about history. It's all in there. Are we going to accept it or not? And then are we going to teach the world around us what is the truth? Because they don't know. We've been given the responsibility to show it to them. Now, I'm going to skip back past a bunch of stuff. I was going to get into something about the worldwide flood. We'll do that with one of the sessions of the kids. And I'll mention it on Friday night. And there's another example here about peer pressure. But I just want to end with this scripture. You see, God has told us clearly, do not be conformed to this world. Now, I've heard this brought up hundreds of times, and it's usually in the context of our behavior. But that's not even what the verse is talking about, because look at the very next line. Be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. If we've been trained to think in a way, whether we're a Christian or not, if we've been trained to think in a way that directly contradicts and conflicts and denies and ignores crystal clear, multiple repetition, New Testament, Old Testament statements of what God has told us, we need to renew our minds. Why? So then we will prove, and that's King James, it means know. Then we will know the good, acceptable, and perfect will of God. And who wouldn't know that? But it has to start with trusting his word. And by the way, isn't that what King David says? He said, Lord, create in me a clean heart. Do you think David had a cholesterol problem? Biblically, it's talking about his thinking. And that's what we need to be doing. And that's what we're clearly going to do with these kids in Vacation Bible School. And be in prayer that they don't just get it. Because little kids get it. You don't have to teach a little kid that God exists. They know it already. It just gets trained out of them. Pray that what they're going to learn in the next 5 days will stick with them and have an eternal impact. And thank you so much.